Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello, you're listening to the Politics Without the Boring Bits podcast. I'm Patrick Maguire, in for Matt Chorley for the final time this week. Matt returns on Monday, and it's been great having your company this week. And I'm signing off with another podcast packed full of great political insight. There's less than a month to go to the local election, so who better to speak to than Westminster's favourite pollster? Don't mention it to John Curtis. We're taking a trip around the country with Robert Haywood, the Tory peer and local elections guru, on what to watch out for on May the 2nd. A month from today, there'll be joys and commiserations as votes are counted in the local elections. I'm joined in the studio by Tory peer and pollster Robert Haywood. How are you, Robert?
I'm well, thanks.
We're going to look at five key areas which could make all the difference. But first, let's discuss the national picture. And there's no way of getting around it. The headline polling is pretty grim reading for Rishi Sunak, isn't it?
It's bad for the Tory party, there's no question about it. And these local elections were last fought at the point of the vaccine bounce in 2021. So it's a good year for the Conservatives now being fought in a bad set of circumstances.
So the losses will be even greater because they're coming from such a high watermark.
Absolutely.
Right, so you've picked out five key areas to watch. The first is the West Midlands, Dudley in particular. Why did you pick this one out?
Dudley has marginal constituencies in terms of parliamentary. It swings very heavily from one side to the other on local council elections. And because of boundary changes for the local council wards, the whole council is up. So it's Conservative controlled at the moment, but it's clearly one that could go Labour on a month's time.
Well, let's speak to Martin Smith, who's local democracy reporter at Birmingham Live. Hi, Martin.
Yeah, good morning.
So who currently holds the council in Dudley?
It's currently run by the Conservatives with a reasonably healthy majority of 10 seats on a 72-seat council.
And who's looking to get... Is this a big Labour target then?
Dudley's always seen changes in control between Labour and the Conservatives. Certainly Labour would be looking to take control. And what's interesting is that there's quite a few areas of the borough where independent groups have emerged. The Lib Dems fancy two or three wards as well. Reform, we don't really know what they're doing yet, but they could have an impact as well. So there are certainly areas where the Conservative vote's going to be under a lot of pressure, which obviously will, in theory, help Labour.
And what are the big local issues driving the campaign?
From what I'm hearing from candidates out and about and from what I'm seeing, I think crime and antisocial behaviour is top of the list for a lot of voters, and certainly what a lot of candidates are hearing out on the doorsteps.
That's really interesting. Martin Smith, thank you very much for joining us, local democracy reporter at Birmingham Live. He mentioned reform there, Robert Haywood. with the sort of caveat, we don't really know what Reform are doing. They don't really have much presence on the ground. Are we likely to see them pick up some councillors in these elections, though, do you think?
Really depends on Friday as to how many nominations they put in, because there was question there in Dudley as to whether they were going to put any in. And that's the case I'm finding, talking to people involved in all the different political parties. They don't know what Reform is going to do. And it's interesting when you then say, well, what does Reform actually stand for? And you look at the polling of Reform voters. If you ask, as a focus group did the other day, well, if you don't vote Reform, what are you going to do? And the answer comes back, we're going to vote Green. And therefore, it's difficult to identify who these people are and if they're going to have an opportunity to vote Reform, let alone what they actually support.
Well, one place, another you picked out, Robert, you'd expect them to have a choice, because UKIP were historically very strong here, is Thurrock in Essex, which for a time was a three-way marginal at a Westminster level between Labour, UKIP and the Tories. It's really, really interesting, this one, because the Conservatives, Labour and Reform will all be hoping to do well here. So why is this so interesting? Who currently holds the council in Thurrock?
The Conservatives did control it, but they withdrew the whip from two councillors recently. So although they're still running the council, it's in effectively no overall control. It's one of the councils of which there are many right across the country that have had serious financial difficulties. And there is limited information that Reform are going to stand. What there is, rather like the observation made just now in relation to Dudley, is a series of independents and all sorts of alternatives. And this plays to this broader issue that people don't have strong party affiliations. Mm. They may not like the Conservatives, but they're not actually sure where they're going to cast their votes. And in many cases, it may well be for independents, residence groups or whatever. Although Reform will get the attention in terms of interest, there could be lots of other groups in different parts of the country.
And do you think, say, if, for instance, there is a big independent showing in Thurrock or a big Reform showing in Thurrock, you know, the seats in Thurrock, like Basildon, for instance, which, you know, 1992, yes, famously held by David Amos. That was a sign Labour weren't going to win. Then won by Labour in 1997 by Angela Smith. Do you think if the Tories don't win in Basildon, at the locals, does that sort of portend a similar thing on election night at the general election? You know, we'll likely see them lose it, and that's a sign that the Tories are going to win the general election in turn.
I think there's a lot of difference between voting in local elections and voting in national elections. But I have a sneaking suspicion that quite a lot of your colleagues will be saying, oh, that's a clear indication that this is going to happen in a general election. It isn't, but there is a natural tendency to read across.
Indeed. Well, you know, that's journalists are particularly bad for that sort of thing. Right, let's head to Berkshire now, to Wokingham, where we can speak to Phil Creighton, the editor of Wokingham Today. Hi, Phil.
Hi, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us. So what's the lay of the land in Wokingham? Who is running the council currently?
Well, at the minute, it's a no overall control, but the Liberal Democrats have got a minority administration. They're one seat away from having a majority.
So they'll be hoping to tip the balance then on the 2nd of May. Do you think they're likely to?
Yes, I do. It's an all-out election in Wokingham this year. All 54 seats are up for grabs because of the boundary commission changes. And talking to the different parties, Labour is feeling very confident about making some gains. The Lib Dems, they think they will be in a position where they can take full control. The Conservatives, obviously, they're hoping to regain control of the council. But it remains to be seen. If the national vote is pushing down the local vote, then, you know, the Conservatives haven't got a hope of getting the seat back, the council back.
And it's interesting, if people who are politically engaged know the name Wokingham, they don't live there, they'll recognise it's John Redwood's parliamentary seat. You know, it's been considered a safe Conservative seat for a very long time. Is that changing now? Do you think the Lib Dem surge you're likely to see next month is a reaction against the Conservatives more than it is anything else?
Well, Wokingham is actually a very curious area. The borough of Wokingham actually has four parliamentary seats in it at the minute. It's going to have three from the next election, one of which is Theresa May's seat, Maidenhead. Half of Maidenhead is actually in Wokingham Borough. And in the referendum, the Brexit referendum, Wokingham was a very strong Remain place. So it's completely at odds with John Redwood. And again, you know, there are a lot of people here who like John Redwood. They say he's a brilliant constituency MP, but there's also a lot of people who think he's a dinosaur and they would like to see him gone.
Well, Phil Creighton, thanks very much for joining us from Wokingham today. Robert, really interesting council, this one. It's a reminder that while the Tories are being hit on the right by reform, and they're also vulnerable to independents and residents groups, in the Blue Wall, what we now call the Blue Wall in the South East, it's the Liberal Democrats they have to worry about.
It is, and that's why I chose Wokingham, because it's an interesting example with a personality, i.e. John Redwood. I commented reread across. I did also choose it because the reference to parliamentary boundary changes, Wokingham itself, in terms of the new parliamentary constituency, will be a Lib Dem target. But a large part of the borough of Wokingham will go into a seat called Early and Woodley, which will be a Labour target, because it includes not only part of Wokingham, but also part of Reading. So there are, it's a very interesting place to look at.
Interesting question on the WhatsApps from Chris for you, Robert. He says, I'm from the Midlands, living in leafy Richmond in London now. Why would anyone in Dudley vote for Labour given the chaos in neighbouring Birmingham? The Lib Dems do a good job, but I wouldn't vote for them in a general election. People should separate local and national politics. Is that question about Dudley and Birmingham I'm interested in? Do you think Labour's handling, or you know, the difficulties some Labour councillors have had, particularly in Birmingham, could harm their chances in, say, winning the mayoralty of Birmingham, winning neighbouring councils?
Absolutely, and it's the reason I warned against a read-across between a local election and a national election, because people do, on occasions, probably not often enough, look at local councils and neighbouring councils and take a view as to how they will vote on a local election, which may be different from a national election.
Interesting. Well, speaking of local and national elections, here's a place that's been a national spotlight recently. Let's head up to Rochdale, where we can speak to Joseph Tymon from the Manchester Evening News. Hi, Joseph.
Hello.
So who currently holds Rochdale Council then?
So Rochdale Council is quite comfortably held by Labour at the moment. They've got 46 out of the 60 seats there. The Tories, Lib Dems and an independent group each have sort of single digit figures.
So who's looking to gain it? Because when George Galloway won a by-election in Bradford in 2012, he subsequently took his Respect Party and made a lot of gains on the council. Is George Galloway, who obviously won the parliamentary by-election in February, looking to do the same thing this time?
Well, they're definitely going to challenge Labour in certain areas. I mean, with such a comfortable majority, I don't think Labour has any worries about losing control of the council. But yeah, there's definitely certain areas where they did well in the by-election that they'll be targeting and hoping to do some damage to Labour locally as well.
And what are the key issues locally?
Well, at the by-election, as much as Gaza was sort of quite dominant in terms of the narrative we heard about what George Galloway was campaigning about, when I went out and spoke to people, people were talking about public services, cost of living, youth clubs came up a lot. You know, there's an awareness of, you know, lack of funding, cuts over the last sort of few years. But Labour didn't seem to be the answer for a lot of those people. So as much as people were voting for Galloway, partly because of his stance on Gaza, it was also a rejection of Labour in some sense, but perhaps nationally. Whether that translates to the local elections, it's difficult to tell. I mean, they're very specific hyper-local issues, you know, a cycle lane here and a development on the green belt there, that could, you know, Labour could focus its campaign on more strongly. I think from what I've heard from George Galloway's campaign, they will be focusing on the local council and what they describe as sort of lack of representation, a lack of, you know, good representation on the local council. So I think it's going to be quite a different campaign from
the by-election.
From the by-election.
Well,
yeah.
Joseph Tymon from the Manchester Evening News, thank you very much. Do you agree with that, Robert?
I do. What there was no reference to, but I think it was implied, was that at the by-election, George Galloway won very easily. But the second candidate was an independent.
Yes, David Tully, a local Cardinal, yeah.
And that indicates what's so fascinating about these elections, that there are votes up for grabs potentially to go in every direction. But Rochdale is one of those places where, like Thurrock, I will be looking on Friday to see who has been nominated by which parties, and therefore what the nature of the contests will actually be, because there could be disparate nominations in parts of Rochdale as there could be in Thurrock.
Well, let's see. And it'd be interesting to see, as Joseph Tyne from the Manchester Evening News was saying there, if George Galloway's Workers' Party do put up candidates, where they will be and whether they're going to try and exploit discontent over Gaza in sections of the community. Finally, Robert, just before we finish, a word on Sheffield and Bristol, where the Greens will be looking to make gains.
Two very interesting cities, large student populations, big Lib Dem and Green votes in both cities. And the question is whether either of those parties can actually profit from Labour's U-turn on Green issues a few weeks back. And I would expect to see some very, very interesting contests in those two big cities.
So there you go. Keep an eye on Dudley, Wokingham and many other places besides on May the 2nd. Now we're going to take a trip back to the year 2000. As Tim Shipman and I unpack a classic edition of PMQs.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Order! Order! I call Patrick Maguire.
And Tim Shipman.
Yes, it's a Wednesday. It's not 12 o'clock, it's 11 o'clock, and MPs aren't in Westminster. So instead, we're bringing you classic PMQs unpacked. And as Lindsay Hoyle just said, Tim Shipman is here. Hi, Tim, how are you?
I'm good. I'm excited about this.
Yeah, me too.
These guys were both quite good at this game.
They were, weren't they? You know, it's, and we haven't really been, you know, you've seen most matchups, but you saw this matchup you've seen since then. Has anyone matched Blair and Haig? Blair and Cameron, I imagine, were, but yeah, that was sort of late period Blair.
It was late Blair. I mean, the thing was, Haig was never in a strong position politically, but he was always very good at PMQs, and Blair always was in a strong position politically, but it didn't always seem like it. I mean, the first 7-8 years of my career were Blair Brown, Brown, Blair, Blair Brown, fighting all the time. And, you know, easily the most successful government during my professional career. You know, 3 easy election wins and, you know, able to do most of what they wanted when they worked out what that was. But it always felt like a state of minor crisis. Tony Blair had more worse weeks than any other prime minister since. But, my God, we didn't have a clue what chaos actually looked like.
And we've been spoiled since, as your upcoming book will make clear, Tim. So we're going back in time to July 2000... to hear William Haig take on Tony Blair. Last week we heard John Major take questions from the Leader of the Opposition. We're going forward in time 4 years, and Tony Blair is now Prime Minister. William Haig, who was Welsh Secretary last time we heard from John Major on Tony Blair on this item, is now the leader of the Tory Party. And this is how July 2000 sounded.
Go on, leave me breathless.
Putin wasn't perturbed by the Downing Street protests as he met the British Prime Minister.
Tony Blair urged the West not to isolate Russia over Chechnya.
Well, I've been coming up to celebrate the Queen Mother's birthday every year for the last 5 years. I think it's remarkable that she's managed to get to the age of 100.
Just about 12 hours and 6 minutes from right now, the highly anticipated fourth Harry Potter book goes on sale.
Jennifer Aniston and Brad Pitt arrived at the Warner Brothers party at the Four Seasons Hotel in Beverly Hills.
The hard part is giving people what they want fast, like Amazon.co.uk. Over 1 million customers.
I'm really sad to say it, but I think this may be the end for Concorde.
Trezeguet! France have won the European Championship!
Come on, leave me breathless.
Oh God, the late John Motson. I think I've got something in my eye.
Yeah, and England still haven't won anything since.
I wasn't ready to hear from John Motson at this time in the morning. Right, so it's Wednesday, the 12th of July, 2000. Tony Blair, no longer leader of the opposition. He won his landslide in 1997. He's now in number 10. PMQ is now one session on a Wednesday. William Hague is across the dispatch box. It's been a tricky few weeks for Tony Blair, if it's possible to imagine that. People now looking back on New Labour's first term as a sort of, you know, walk in the park. Just a month before this session of PMQs, Blair was heckled and slow clapped off stage by the Women's Institute.
I've spent a long time trying to work very hard on the National Health Service. Thank you very much.
God, you hear that now, Tim, and
I remember it at the time. It was this proper tingle, cringe up the spine kind of stuff. Because he turned up and made a political speech at what they considered to be a kind of an occasion where you should, you know, address them as the good women of Middle England rather than
compliment
sort of
their jam and...
Yeah, rather than sort of stand up and turn it into a kind of political platform, and they didn't like it one bit. And that was, you know, that was the kind of... This was back in the day when women voted Tory, some of them, in much rather numbers than they do now. And this was kind of the proper revolt of the Blue Rinse Shires. It was quite the moment.
And there's lots going on in Tony Blair's cabinet. Robin Cook, who's the Foreign Secretary, has said a couple of days before it's inevitable that the UK would join the euro. Downing Street slapped him down. They insisted membership was not a foregone conclusion. Turns out they were right. And Tony Blair is looking to boost his party's prospects in the 2001 general election, or obviously you can call one in 2002, but he's gearing up for a general election. He's about to announce a large spending package in a press conference after this session of PMQ. So lots of opportunities for Hague. The Times on this morning is leading on that spending package. Portillo refuses to match Labour spending is the front page. Portillo is the... Michael Portillo, that is the shadow chancellor. The Queen Mother has just turned 100, and there's some violence in Northern Ireland on the front page as well, despite it being two years after the Good Friday Agreement.
And the headline on the Royal Story is Royals One Big Happy Family, and there's a picture of William and Harry next to each other chuckling. It's a long time ago, isn't
it? It's a very long time ago. Who'd have thought it? Who'd have thought it? And of course, They still had polls in them days. Ipsos Mori for the Times, a couple of weeks before, give Labour a 14-point lead. They're on 47 to the Tories, 33. The Lib Dems on 13. I think the Tories would kill to be on 33 now. Right, but let's get to it. Here's Betty Boothroyd getting things underway.
Questions to the Prime Minister. Mr Ben Bradshaw.
Question one, Madam Speaker.
Madam Speaker, this morning I'm meeting some ministerial colleagues and others. In addition to my duties in the House, I will have further such meetings later today.
Right, William Hague starts with a tribute to Robert Runcie, the former Archbishop of Canterbury, who died the day before.
Well, Madam Speaker, may I begin by associating this side of the House, with the Prime Minister's remarks about Archbishop Runcie, who we will remember for his integrity and moral leadership, and we entirely join in his tribute to him today. On domestic political matters, does the Prime Minister agree with everything the Foreign Secretary has said about the euro over the past week?
I thought on the launch of their tax and spending policy they might have asked me about that. Madam Speaker, I do entirely agree. In principle, we are in favour of membership of the single currency. In practice, the economic tests must be met.
There's a lot in this, isn't there, Tim? You know, one, it's quite interesting to hear the Labour Party challenged over Europe, their divisions over Europe. And also the fact that William Hague is asking on the euro and not the massive public spending plans that Tony Blair is announcing is a reminder that actually nothing got the Tory benches going, even at points of political difficulty, even when they're 14 points behind the polls, like Europe.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, the front page of the Times is all about tax, but if you read the second paragraph, you know, the immediate response of the media is to say, you know, the prevailing mood was, but this will mean cuts to the public services. Now, if you're writing that story now, I think the pressure would be on Labour to say, you know, how are you going to pay for all this stuff? Mm. Whereas back then, if you boasted you were cutting taxes, you had to then explain how you were going to deal with, you know, with the public services. So yes, Europe was always a way out for Haig. You know, he had "Save the Pound" was his election slogan when he got to 2001. But it's interesting because there were divisions, and Blair sort of, it was quite a snappy question and quite a snappy answer. You know, there's not so much of the flannelling around that we tend to get these days. And Blair, of course, a little before this, had sort of said he thought we might be in a position to join in the next parliament. As we know, Gordon Brown, Ed Balls were militantly against that, thought it was always a terrible idea.
Coming up with the tests in the back of a taxi.
Exactly. And you had this, you know, this was the, as I was saying at the start, you know, the whole structure of this government was that the opposition was in the Treasury. It wasn't on the opposition benches. So William Hague could have all his fun, but he was still a distance behind. And it's kind of an interesting lesson for Keir Starmer, this. If he wins a landslide, if he's 15 points up in the polls 3 years into his premiership, there'll still be a load of internal problems in the Labour Party that will occupy the media and everybody in Westminster.
And when your internal enemies or your rivals have whole government departments behind them, that adds another degree of complication.
Well, your opponents sit opposite, your enemies sit behind you, as the old saying goes.
Right, let's hear from Tony Blair's opponent again. Here's William Hague's second question.
Don't we have an extraordinary situation in a cabinet where the Prime Minister cannot say a straight yes as to whether he agrees with his own Foreign Secretary? Don't we have an utterly divided and shambolic government where he can't agree with the Foreign Secretary on a central issue of policy? He wants him to be the Foreign Secretary. Nobody else wants him to be the Foreign Secretary. Now, the Foreign Secretary said on Thursday that it was inevitable that Britain would join the euro. So does he agree with that statement of his own Foreign Secretary, yes or no?
I think we've made it absolutely clear that in principle we are in favour, in practice the economic tests have got to be met. But Madam Speaker, the difference between the two parties is very clear. Of course, he has another guarantee. He's got his guarantee, which is his sterling guarantee. Oh, yeah. That he's going to keep the pound. Now, Madam Speaker, is he keeping the pound for just one parliament or more?
Again, Tony Blair giving as good as he gets. A very sharp question from William Hague. What's interesting, listen to that question from William Hague now with the benefit of 24 years of hindsight. He was onto something about Robin Cook. A year later, Robin Cook is shuffled out of the cabinet, shuffled out of the Foreign Office and made Leader of the House. So he put his finger on something there. Tony Blair and Robin Cook didn't agree on big, substantial questions. Obviously, a bit later on, they disagreed spectacularly over Iraq.
They did. The secret on this, of course, is that Blair probably did agree with Cook, and he sounded a little bit embarrassed when he was trotting out his stock answer. But I thought, again, it's just interesting. You get that there's a crispness to Hague here. You know, there's a sort of derisory tone. He ploughs on in his slightly, you know, awkward accent, but the line about Cook, you know, he wants him to be the Foreign Secretary. Nobody else wants him to be the Foreign Secretary. And there's a bit of sort of laughter on both sides of the House about that, because there's quite a lot of Labour people didn't want him to be Foreign Secretary, as well as all of the Tories. But yeah, Blair gets stuck in. And interesting, the way Blair responds is to say, oh, well, are you committing to the pound for a whole parliament or two? You know, that at the time was seen as, oh, that's put him on the spot. That's a bit questionable. Whereas, you know, looking at it in hindsight, of course he was committing to it for all time, because structurally it never seemed to quite work.
And also, they're such good performers, the both of them, is that all of their, well, particularly the questions Blair offers in response, even if they're not extemporised, they sound like he's extemporising them. They sound like he has come up with that on the spot in a way that, if that were Keir Starmer, and this is a presentational thing, it's a style thing, it's a fleetness of foot thing, You could tell Keir Starmer would be reading that off a piece of paper and sounding like it too.
Yeah, someone clever would have written him a nice joke. but Blair always sounded a little bit estuarial when he got up for PMQs. You know, there's a sort of casualness and chattiness to the way he talks that is slightly put on. But, yeah, I mean, they were both, you know, there just seems there's an energy and pace to it that we don't often get these days.
Mm. Right, let's hear William Hague's third question. Where's he going now?
So the Foreign Secretary is now pursuing his own private policy on the euro.
Oh, order, order! House must come to order, I can't. Mr. Hague.
Madam Speaker, the Foreign Secretary, who has mysteriously disappeared this afternoon, is pursuing his own private policy on the euro. The Prime Minister is too weak to get a grip on the Cabinet. He said last week that he would... Well, I know honourable members don't like to hear the truth about the government. He said last week that he would sack anyone briefing against ministers. Since when, a friend of the Chancellor, that narrows down the list of suspects dramatically, Tony and Gordon have both agreed to rubbish Cook. Now, he goes on about his five economic tests on the euro, but the test that really matters is of leadership on the euro, and he's failed it. And isn't it time that he either change the policy or change the Foreign Secretary, or that we change to a Prime Minister who will keep the pound?
Yeah! Oh, so he's going to keep the pound now. He's going to keep the pound. And now tell me, is that a guarantee or just something he actually intends doing? Madam Speaker, the truth of the matter is, I think it's the right honourable gentleman that wishes he disappeared this afternoon. The fact of the matter is, Madam Speaker, we have the right policy. In principle and favour and practice, the economic tests have to be met. And at the next election, not just on the euro, but on many other areas of policy, there are clear dividing lines. We don't rule it out. We give the people the choice in a referendum. On public spending, we want to invest in the country's future. And on the National Health Service, we want to rebuild it, not privatise it. That is the real test, Madam Speaker. The policies for the future of this country, or a leader of the opposition that one party conference jumps up and says he has five guarantees and 9 months later not a single one of them stands.
Five guarantees from a Tory leader. Where have we heard that recently?
Well, indeed.
It's interesting. It's funny what you said about Tony Blair's estuary English. At times there, especially when he was sort of barracking, hey, you sound a bit like a sort of used car salesman from Shingford. Yeah.
Are these one of your guarantees or is it an actual promise?
Yeah, but
good stuff all round there, wasn't it?
And the joke about from William Hague about the you know, friend of the Chancellor, Gordon Brown, being named in the press and the list of suspects narrowed down dramatically.
The list of suspects
was
two. It was either Ed Balls or it was Damien McBride. It wouldn't have been anybody else. But yes, a very good joke. And Betty Boothroyd as well. Marks for Betty. She actually intervened when she needed to.
And then sat down.
And then sat down and didn't prat about and give a lecture or ask people if they were taking their medicaments, as Burko did, or labour the point, as the current incumbent does so often. She just said, I can't hear what's going on. Will you all shut up? And then she sat down. Much the best speaker in my time in Parliament.
It's also very interesting hearing William Hague attack chaos in the Cabinet, which is not something... We sort of look back and beyond Blair and Brown, I think a lot of the rivalries within those new Labour cabinets, you know, between big personalities like Robin Cook and John Prescott and others, those tensions have sort of been forgotten.
Yeah, but
despite
the
history being recent,
literally,
but they were there,
week in,
they?
Week out, because there was not a great sort of contest between Tories and Labour, it was between Tony Blair and other parts of his government. And that's just how these things end up defaulting. And it's a lesson for Starmer, to be honest. I think. You know, it always seemed much more perilous than it was. You know, Blair, Hague there calling him weak. You know, you can't control your ministers. Well, no prime minister can totally control their ministers. But Tony Blair, with the exception of Margaret Thatcher, was the strongest prime minister since the Second World War in terms of his position. And, you know, all prime ministers have a tough time, have events come up and get in the way, and have people with ambitions and ideas that clashed. And that's what used to be the natural warp and weft of politics. And because we've had these huge, you know, issues with, you know, with Brexit, with COVID, with, you know, two periods of financial difficulty in the last sort of 15 years, that's all rather been forgotten.
Let's see where he goes with his fourth question.
Today the Prime Minister, today he's attempted the third relaunch of his government in a single month. Under the inspiring slogan of "We're getting there." A slogan last used by British Rail when they weren't getting anywhere. And isn't what is really behind that the desperation of ministers to conceal next week's crime figures and their utter failure on crime? The government obviously have the figures, so will he now come clean and tell the House the figures for the rise in crime next year?
Madam Speaker, I think he's the one in need of a relaunch. Let me just tell him on the policy. When he says, well, I tell him what I think is important with rising crime. What is important, Madam Speaker, is that we're now able to make the investment in extra numbers of police officers. Yes. So let's have a little discussion about this. It's correct. It's correct that for the last 6 years, 3 years under his government, 3 years under us, police numbers have fallen. Now, as a result of the additional money, they're going to rise. What we know, however, from the spending policy adopted yesterday, is that he is due to cut the numbers. So, Madam Speaker, every person concerned about crime, every police officer knows in the country that if he comes to power, he's going to cut police numbers further.
It's interesting listening to William Hague nail Tony Blair here on his government being in disarray, in crisis, Tony Blair coming back with a pledge of more public spending, and none of it, knowing the result of the 2001 election, seems to have mattered at all to how voters made the decisions.
No, it never touched the sides. And William, you know, as you said at the top, William Hague was the Welsh secretary, and he ended up, you know, coming through the middle and winning the leadership election. It's the worst thing that ever happened to him. If he sort of arrived on the scene, he'd let somebody else take this parliament and arrived a bit later, it's possible he'd have been the Prime Minister in 2010, and that, you know, he might have lasted a bit longer than David Cameron.
Right, let's hear William Hague's fifth question then.
So the relaunch didn't extend to giving a straight answer to a question. If he won't tell the House the figures, I will, because while the Prime Minister won't give a straight answer, the police force does. And taking 33 out of 43 police forces, there were 183,000 more crimes in the last year than the year before. So under this government, isn't it the burglars who've had a relaunch, and the muggers who are fighting back, and the violent criminals who've got a new deal? Will he now confirm the figures of the police themselves that show at least 183,000 more crimes in the last year?
Madam Speaker, of course, under this government, crime, yes, it is true that in the last year there's been a 3-4% rise in crime, as we know. Though over the period of this government, of course, there's been a fall in crime. What we also remember, however, is that when he was in office, crime doubled. The question is, what do we do? We now have proposals on youth justice, three strikes and you're out for burglary, which is in fact why burglary figures are falling, drugs and crime through the new criminal justice bill, and investment in the police and in their equipment. Now, let's get to the difference between the two of us. I believe the priority is to make that investment in schools and hospitals and transport and the police. Does he stand by the cuts guarantee on spending made by himself and the Shadow Chancellor yesterday or not? If he does, then anything he says on police numbers has no credibility whatever.
So having started on Europe, William Hague now bashing the Prime Minister on crime, obviously the Tories made a lot of hay out of this over the course of the following decade. You had Are You Thinking What We're Thinking in 2005. David Cameron subsequently started hugging hoodies. But it's interesting to see him shift on from an issue that is a preoccupation of the Tories, i.e. let's have some Euro red meat for my backbenchers. Now he's going on something that seems much more retail friendly in crime.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I mean, I thought those were both quite interesting as well. I mean, Haig's lines were not great there, talking about, you know, relaunch for the burglars and all the rest of it. But he does it with, he talks very loudly. He knows he's going to get a load of barracking, and he's loud, and he just keeps ploughing on. Whereas, you know, you sort of see with Starmer often, he'll kind of, if it's noisy, he'll sort of back off and wait for it to quieten down. And Haig just ploughs on. And that was the kind of answer that I think it would be interesting if Rishi Sunak was able to provide on some of these issues. Blair started by admitting, yes, crime has gone up, but what are we doing about it? And what was your record? And here's the genuine choice we face, which is that we need to invest in this and la, 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 la. And for a long time, that argument worked. And that was a very coherent kind of sort of fronting up to the nation and saying, let's be reasonable, chaps. And this is what Blair was really, really good at, because people would listen to him and think, well, that sounds perfectly reasonable. And he was able to make a lot of his political positions sound like the sort of mainstream view of the British public. And I think Sunak spends so much time as Prime Minister sort of pretending that things aren't going on, or rather than saying, yes, I know it's happening, and some of that happened under Liz Truss and Boris Johnson, and I'm now doing this about it, but it'll take a bit of time. And really, what is your alternative here? Is it going to be this or this or this? But he's so defensive, he never sort of gets round to making that sort of reasoned argument.
It's weird, because we thought Rishi Sunak, the Rishi Sunak we got to know during COVID, would be good at that. The Rishi Sunak who took on Liz Truss in the leadership campaign was quite good at that too. But now, as you say, sort of almost denialism. Basically, if someone rings him on another radio station's phone in and says, I'm, you know, £10 poorer, they'll say, I think you'll find the average person is only £5 poorer. So they should all be grateful.
Well, I think Sunak has absorbed enough criticism to know that he's not brilliant at politics. But then he thinks being good at politics is just sort of rowing and denying it, whereas actually being really good at politics is kind of absorbing some of the blows and then sending them back with, you know, in a way that makes you sound like the credible person.
Mm. Right, let's wrap this up then with William Haig's final questions to Tony Blair. What are the rhetorical flourishes the leaders are going to employ here?
Madam Speaker, he stands up in Downing Street this morning and says, we're getting there. But millions of people across Britain know that this government is getting nowhere. Because what does it say? What does it say to people more likely to be victims of violent crime when he says, we are getting there? And people waiting longer now to see a hospital consultant when he says, we are getting there? And people whose teenage children are in larger classes and he says, we are getting there? And people persecuted by the Chancellor every time they drive their car and he says, we are getting there? It says to those people that this government is complacent and incompetent and has now lost touch with the people it was elected to serve.
Well, Madam Speaker, on the subject of incompetence, let's just look at his National Health Service guarantee. Right, 9 months ago, he said that every patient would be guaranteed a waiting time in the National Health Service under the Conservatives. It took two questions on BBC's Question Time for him to say, of course we couldn't say that everyone was going to get it. That is my definition of incompetence. And Madam Speaker, yes, though it is true we have raised public spending, it is correct that for 5, 6 and 7 year olds the class sizes are down, there's the extra money in school buildings, but yes, it's true, we still have a long way to go in schools. Yes, we've got the inpatient list coming down, but we still have far more to do in the health service. Yes, it is true also we need to make additional investments in our police and transport. But Madam Speaker, what we now know is that all those investments would be cut by him. And so, whatever he says about public services, the one thing that everyone in the country now knows is that if they vote Tory at the next election, it's fewer nurses, fewer teachers, fewer police and fewer hospitals.
As you say, Tim, it's the mirror of what we hear now, which is now the onus is on the Labour Party to say how they'll pay for more of those things, rather than the main discussion being, well, how they're going to be cut by.
Yeah, and Blair clearly gearing up for an election now. I mean, we know it was in 2001, but there was a suspicion it might sort of come in 2000 at one stage. And again, you know, Haig, not as good as he was in the first half of things, but sort of the use of repetition, you know, getting there, is reasonably rhetorically effective. talking about complacent, incompetent and lost touch. You say that about any government from the position of leader of the opposition. But Blair automatically turning it, yes, far more to do. And by the way, that's why we'll have an election and we'll ask for five more years, because we know there's more to do. But that was a sort of masterclass in how, you know, Blair was able to sort of absorb the blows and come back. He hated PMQs, loathed it like most prime ministers do, but he was normally pretty good at it. And I think it's interesting for people looking at it now. The first half of that, Haig was effectively picking holes in internal Labour rows over Europe, and that was pretty effective. But when it came to a straight fight between a dominant government and an opposition over where to spend money, I think
Blair, he played him off the park, basically.
Blair played him off the park.
So there you go. I think Tony Blair and William Haig were on as even there. At least that's what me and Tim Shipman from the Sunday Times thought. Remember, you can read Tim's magisterial long reads on British politics every week in the Sunday Times. Just pick up a copy of the paper or get yourself a digital subscription. And remember, we've got a special offer on at the moment. 3 months for just £1. That's right, a quid. What more could you ask for? That's it from me on Politics Without the Boring Bits for a little while. You'll be hearing from Matt again soon. It's been great having your company. Thank you for all the feedback, the abuse, the words of encouragement. It all means an awful lot. See you soon, and in the meantime, make sure you like, share, subscribe, and follow wherever you get your podcast from.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.